Tamara Engel was a very dear friend of both of ours, and she was one of the co-founders of New York Insight. And so she was a very dear friend of mine and a colleague, and we talked a lot about the spiritual life. And she used to say that the hardest part of the spiritual path was being in relationship. That when you're in relationship, you really bump into all aspects of yourself, and you bump into all aspects of somebody else, right? And how to stay with some kind of equanimity and to live with some kind of relational ease. And so steps 8 and 9 put us very close to this fire of relationship. We can't avoid very much anymore. As we do the steps, a lot of it we're basically doing on our own reflection, and maybe with a trusted sponsor. But now we're moving out. Now these steps are starting to call upon us to get more actively involved in cleaning up some of our relationships. So no more hiding. You know, it can be very comfy to go to meetings and to talk openly in meetings about what's going on. But then to come out and to talk that openly with people who are not part of program but who are part of your life and have possibly suffered a little bit from their relationship with you, me, us, that makes it a little harder. So step 8 made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. That's huge. That word all makes it quite large. And then 9, made such amends except when to do so would injure them or others. That's a lot about taking personal responsibility and taking care also of the other person. And if these steps are done with diligence, they are exceptional in creating healthier relationships with others and healthier relationships with ourselves. I think so much of the work we do in program, so much of the work we do in spiritual life, separate from program, is how do we have a healthier relationship with this person we live with 24/7? You know, sometimes you can ask yourself, God, if I met another me, could I live with that person 24/7? The deep, honorable, beautiful me, yes. But not so much the conditioned one that's sort of activated so much of the time. So tonight, I'd like to talk a little bit about step 8, so Nancy, and then next month, continue with step 9. Or we'll see what happens tonight. So no surprise at all that so many of the difficulties in relationship, come from thinking that we are the center of the universe. But not only our universe, we somehow want to be the center of everybody else's universe. And that may sound like a throwaway line, but it's very, very deep. The Buddha very often talked about, as did Bill, Bill talked about self-will run riot. And in so much of the Buddha's teachings, it's fine. Now, yes, we're going to say, I went to the grocery store, this watch is mine. But it's the grasping, the clinging, as if all this was who I am and who I was. In so many ways, when we get so involved in me, we exclude other people. We don't have room, right, for other people. And in that way can cause harm. We are the subject, and we can treat other people as objects. And so I'll just ask you for a moment, have you ever had the experience where you thought somebody else just wasn't relating to you as another human being, but as an object in their life? Right? Anybody can just shake your head. I don't like it. It doesn't feel good. So I'd like to read something from a well-known Tibetan master, and I believe I've read it here before. You know, sometimes when you find something that says something so right on, so straight, why reinvent the wheel, you know? So he says, it's Geshe Kelsang Gyatso. Until now, we have cherished ourselves above all others, and for as long as we continue to do this, our suffering will never end. The path to enlightenment is really very simple. All we need to do, all we need to do is stop cherishing ourselves and learn to cherish others. Okay, that's it, go home. So it's simple, but not easy. And he says, all other spiritual realizations will naturally follow from this. We have been slaves to our self-cherishing mind. Now, whenever I read something about slavery, it gets my attention. What is it like to really feel into, I have been a slave to my own self-cherishing mind? Somehow that sort of ignites something in me that wants to make a difference. He says, we have trusted it implicitly, obeyed its every command, believing that the way to solve our problems and find happiness is to put ourselves before everyone else. We've worked so hard and for so long for our own sake, but what do we have to show for it? Have we solved all our problems? Have we found the lasting happiness that we desire? No, it's clear that pursuing our own selfish interests has deceived us. And I'm just going to inject something in here. Our society and our media are continuously promoting self-indulgence, self-growth, but not community growth necessarily. So we have an extra job here. We're starting to learn one way of being, and it's running counter to so much of how society is looking at things. So this takes courage. And one of the things I so admire about the 12-step program and all its different manifestations is how courageous we can become if we really follow along with the teachings, and likewise with the Buddha. This view is the source of all our ordinary selfish intentions. It's precisely because we think, I'm so important. Oh, I need this. I deserve that. That we engage in negative actions which result in an endless stream of problems for ourselves and others. Self will learn by it. But there's nothing here that says that we're not important. We need to take care of ourselves and what we need, but not to the exclusion of everybody else, as if they didn't exist. As if they didn't exist. In discourse after discourse, in sutta after sutta, the Buddha keeps showing how the agonizing pain of I, me, mine, I, keeps us on this wheel that they took, the wheel of samsara, the wheel of greed, anger, and delusion. Greed, anger, delusion. It's also known as the wheel of suffering, because it just keeps going round and round, and it's always, if I just get this, it'll be better. If I can just do that, why did that person get in my way? Greed, anger, and delusion. And you know, in 12-step program, we use the word denial very, very quickly, right? Well, the Buddha talks a lot about delusion. Denial is delusion. So as we look at this and we take it in, we can understand how relationships can be greatly affected by this. Right? If you don't take the other person into account, it is going to affect the relationship. So when recovering addicts, alcoholics, whatever, and with people with whatever kind of compulsive behavior, take this first step of admitting powerlessness. There's hope for stepping off the wheel. There's a beginning. One of the brilliant things of the 12-step program for me, that although it focuses on letting go of an addiction, it brings up questions and it brings up a way of being for all people. For all people. It's a beautiful program of learning how to live. Learning how to live, as is the Buddha's teachings. What happens as we're working the program and as we're deepening in our understanding of the Buddha's teachings, as we're deepening in our own meditation practices, which are very, very powerful for helping us see how fakakta our minds are. Perhaps you saw that in the 25 minutes that Nancy was leading. We really do not have all the answers. We don't even know the right questions most of the time. And yet we think that our way is the right way. It's really befuddling. And I get into this also. I'm not saying I'm above this, but wow, it's just awesome. So when we start to do this work, we start reflecting on what are our personality characteristics. There's nothing wrong with having a personality, but what are the characteristics that lead to some very unskillful behavior? One of the things I really admire in the Buddha's teachings, it doesn't use the words, at least in the translations, it doesn't use the words good and bad. So it's not like I'm bad for doing this or I'm good for doing that. He talks more about skillful and unskillful. What of our behaviors and ways of relating are skillful? And what are unskillful? And they use words like wholesome and unwholesome, and it takes away the sting, I think, of I'm bad. Or the hubris of, oh, I'm good. But just looking at this whole process of relating to ourselves and to others. So we start this process, perhaps, of being willing to start shedding some of the unskillful traits or ways of behavior. But I'll also put in here, this can be a little scary. This can be a little scary because what we're really talking about is letting ourselves become more vulnerable. So much of what we do or have done or the way we act and react is conditioned behavior that we may have learned a long time ago in order to protect ourselves, in order to save ourselves from some kind of psychological or physical harm. And so when we start to think about letting go, sometimes the question can come up, who am I? What am I? Who am I? How do we do this? So these steps 8 and 9, they really require a kind of courageous effort and sincerity. I think compassion is deeply involved in this. As we start to understand, right, and own our intentions, start to own what we've done. How many times I heard myself say, or I've heard other people say, how could they do that to me? I don't understand why she talked to me that way. But I don't take into account that I may have had something to do with it. Like, I may have acted in a way that this other person is going to go, woohoo. And so we start to look. And we see that all our actions and our talk, all our speech and our thoughts have consequences. That's a short version of what's called karma. All our actions are going to have, is going to be cause and effect. And very often we're just aware of the effect. We're not aware that we may be the cause. So this is a profound undertaking that we're doing. And the making of amends, once we've made the list, is a way of changing the karma. You know, starting to shed some of the darker karma, the difficult karma. And we are becoming so much more mindful of our unskillful behaviors and their emotional consequences. And then we start to learn to act in a little bit of a different way. So I'll just throw out a question. I don't know many of your backgrounds, but do you find in any way that since you've been working with the 12 steps and or the Buddhist teachings that you're acting and speaking in a little bit of a different way at times? Anybody just want to raise their hand if they've noticed any? Yeah. We're changing our karma. When we have an aspiration to live a more open and free life, we become willing to go beyond the storylines of who did what to whom. So much of how we live our lives are caught in some narrative. I'll never forget, it was quite a while ago, but a very good friend of mine said, "Oh, I pulled a Sandra Weinberg today." I said, "You pulled a Sandra Weinberg today?" I said, "My God, what did you do?" And she told me, and I said, "I haven't done that with 10 years. But we remember things and we don't let other things open and take its place. You know, think about some of the people that you're in relationship with. Maybe you've stuck them in a box and not allowed them to really, in your mind, be the new people that they are. Because we're always changing. What is this? It's a process. This mind-body is a process. But then we go, no, I'm a... Yeah, we can start to change that. As we hold this aspiration to really be free, and we can go back to places like step one. I think almost anybody who comes into the program, any one of the programs, at some point says, "Oh, I want that. I want what they have. I want to be absent. I want to be sober. I want..." And then other things fall into place because when you want it enough, right, then you're willing to do, a lot of the times you're willing to do what the program suggests. So if you really want to be free, if you really want to be free to be all that you can be, then these kinds of steps and these kinds of investigations, even though they can be scary, it's like, okay, this is the next piece. So somewhere in here, forgiveness happens at a certain part of this process, certain forgiveness for ourselves. We start to give forgiveness to others. And we start to want to make an amend to other people. We soften around what we have done. Not soften in the sense of, oh, it doesn't matter, but soften around our own self-hatred, perhaps. And we soften about what we've not done. And we soften about our expectations of others as well as we work this. And we see that when some form of addiction has been our main relationship, it will definitely get in the way of relating to people. If anybody asks me, "Do you want to have this bourbon or do you want to go on a date with this great guy?" Believe me, no problem. I'll take the bourbon. Not anymore. But nowadays I'll take the cookie, so okay. But yeah, it just took us over, right? Addiction takes us over. In the same way, addicting to me, I'm the most important person, that takes us over. And this is where we have a chance to start to let go. So making mistakes is human. Yeah, it's human. Very often it's no major thing. Right? But if we can learn to see and express the truth, when we make a mistake, when we act in a way that's not terribly wholesome, then things can move on. But again, this takes willingness, takes awareness, and it often takes courage. that's not easy to be open. Until you get so used to being open that it feels good, you know, then it becomes easy. So I know for myself, I don't think of myself as someone who intentionally harms others. I don't even think of myself often as someone who harms others. And there have been countless times when a friend would say to me something about how she or he felt when I did such and such. And I wasn't even aware that it was a big deal. And so good friends who are willing to say to you, hey, you know, it hurts when you do this or that, they're a gift. So I get, that first, it's a gift that first you go, well, I don't want to open the gift, you know, I don't want to see in the mosque. But you start to go, oh, okay, I need to look at that. I need to look at that anymore. I had no idea of the impact of my words. That's a big one. Sometimes some of the throwaway lines. And I know one way where I hurt people. I don't answer emails very quickly. And people can feel like maybe I don't care, maybe I'm not listening. Maybe, and yet I know when I send an email and I don't get a response within 2 days, I start to wondering, oh my goodness, blah, blah, blah. You know? So we start to look at all these different things. Again, we can be so self-protective and get defensive, we lose sight of the other. And I'm coming back and saying what I said before, we can forget that the other is a subject, not an object. So look around the room. Everyone here is a subject. Everyone here is important in their own lives. And yet we can still think, oh, well, I'm the one that really matters here. And while we're sitting here together and talking about it, it may not seem like such a big thing, but we get out onto the street, it shows up. So all very often, or maybe all too often, we're aware of our feelings. We're aware of our thoughts. We're aware of our body. Not taking into account what might be happening for the other person. I'm just not even taking it into account. Sounds so simple. Here the Buddha says, and he says this often, be mindful of what is happening in your own thoughts and in your own feelings and more, but also take in the other person as best you can. He talked about being mindful internally, externally, and both. Internally, externally, and both. And he speaks very eloquently about this. Not just internally. When we wrote our fourth step, if anybody here did fourth step, we considered ways that we harmed other people, right? But I'm not sure that all of us took into what it was actually like for the other person when we did what we did. What their actual subjective experience, and we can know, gosh, when I do that, that was really unskillful and painful and what have you. But do we really know what the other person felt? What it was like for them? Most of the time, we don't. Most of the time, we don't. For me, my sense is that when I consider how my behavior affects someone else and what it's like to be them, like put myself in their shoes, I am much more keen to make amends and my heart is much more open. When for a moment I become the other person. And this gap between me and them starts to disappear. Which is really wonderful because when the gap is there, it's very easy to fall into the gap. Then nobody's there. As we reflect on how our past or present behavior has harmed somebody else, we're getting more intimate with a key teaching of the Buddha, which is do no harm. That is a key teaching of the Buddha. Do no harm. And maybe you've heard this, the Dalai Lama once said how important it was to be kind to other people. And then he said, and I love this because he's so real, but if you can't be kind, at least do no harm. At least do no harm. And we harm in so many ways. We harm by commission and we harm by omission. And that's something that on your own you can think about some of the different ways. So there's a four-step practice in the Tibetan Buddhist philosophy that can take us through this procedure of becoming willing. And I'll just say a very little bit. But first, recognize. Recognize that you've done something that caused suffering or harm. Recognize it. A lot of that we've done in our fourth step, but now we're taking it off the paper and we're bringing it into real life. You know, if we want to be forgiven, we need to understand what needs to be forgiven. Harm, thought, word, action that causes suffering to others. To become aware of, we need to become aware of and avoid doing harm. But we need, and I think this is a really important reflection or contemplation, need to become aware of why we are doing certain things that we're doing. So it's not enough to say, oh, he hurt my feelings, that's why I called him a horse's ass. That's not enough. What hurt your feelings? What does that mean? What got hurt? What is sensitive in there? What needs some tender, loving care? And so we explore deeper and deeper. So can you see that we're going deeper into this process? And, you know, one of the things the Buddha said, that harm is very often the result of discomfort the way things are. We don't like the way things are, we might do anything to get things better without taking into account how that can affect other people. So we ask ourselves, made a list, people we had harmed, who did I hurt? How? How did I hurt that person? And why? What was going on? What was going on? Because it's not enough. I remember soon after I got sober, I immediately went to making amends, right? And I went to my ex-husband and I said, I want to apologize. And he said, well, what happened? And I said, well, I stole money and this, that. And I said, I'm sorry. He said, it's fine to let it go. It's not a big deal. And I said, don't you understand? I'm apologizing. And why? I'm making an amend and you just... We got to understand a little more deeply what's going on. And so to do this, then we can contemplate the destructive habitual patterns in our life. You know, we all have patterns. You know, and patterns can be changed. That's the really good news. So another way is, who have I tried to control? Who have I been blaming? Who have I been judging? Who do I take stuff from? You know, we start to really look at this. And if you can't do it all at once, don't. Do it in little tidbits, but do it. It's worth putting your whole being into this because it can ultimately change your life and just does marvels for spiritual growth. So first is recognize. And then sit with the feeling of remorse and regret. Not, oh, I'm such a bad person. No, no, no. Just sit with the feeling of, oh, I really hurt that person. Feel it in your body. Experience the emotions. Because when we're remorseful, we really do recognize the harm, right, that we caused by our behavior. It's not about pushing away the feelings. That's not going to help. Because when we have remorse, we really want to make some changes. Now, this is not about guilt. We're not talking guilt here. That's another important thing to remember. Guilt becomes very self-absorbed. Remorse wants to open and make changes. So with the recognition, with the remorse, we move to action. We move to approach something. So we're going to go more deeply into this as we go into step 9. And once we have this and we can arouse some compassion for ourselves, the next thing is setting an intention toward positive action. When the time is right. When the time is right for us internally and externally. When we're willing to take responsibility for our actions. When we're willing. So, as you can hear, step 8 is not done lightly. You know? I don't think any of the steps are done lightly, but this is one that is taking us out of our little cave, out into the world of relationship, and not done by rote. And it's an ever-deepening, deepening process of self-reflection. And I think when we do it, it is really important to do it in the spirit of self-compassion and forgiveness. I think holding this step in the oil, so to speak, of forgiveness just makes this work so much more beautiful. So I'd like to end this part of my talk now with a little bit of a very short bit of meditation from Jack Kornfield on forgiveness, a little bit. So just sit in a way that's comfortable and relaxed. And just take in what I'm going to say. There are many ways that I have hurt and harmed myself. I have betrayed or abandoned myself many times through thought, word, and deed, knowingly and unknowingly. Just take that in. And let yourself see for a few moments the ways that you have hurt or harmed yourself. Yourself. Picture them. Remember them. Feel the sorrow you have carried from this and sense that you can release these burdens. We can start the process of extending forgiveness for each one of them, one by one. This obviously can be a very long meditation. So for now, take one way that you've abandoned yourself or hurt or harmed yourself. One way, think of one way. And extend forgiveness to yourself for this. See what that's like. And repeat to yourself, for this way that I have hurt myself, through action or inaction, out of fear, pain, and confusion, I now extend a full and heartfelt forgiveness. I forgive myself. I forgive myself. Opening your heart to yourself. I forgive myself for this way I hurt and abandoned myself. Breathe in. Thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.